ceramic vase off the table in the hall. Fern had brought it home from a swap meet, saying she thought it was pretty, and the thing was a magnet for the weird, translucent lizards that kept getting in. We dumped the things out on the porch at least twice a week. Well, they could find a new lizard motel, because I was about to smash this one over somebody's head. We inched our way down the hall toward the kitchen. We were almost there when I paused, sniffing the air. Is that chicken? Good, you're up, said Mary, a beat before the kitchen lights clicked on. There was my old babysitter, white hair braided back to keep it away from her face, Lowry-branded attire traded for her more customary faded jeans and white peasant top. A red and white bucket that smelled strongly of fried chicken, clogged arteries, and good life choices rested on the counter in front of her, along with several smaller containers of side dishes, corn, and gravy and potatoes. Fern squeaked. Mary's attention switched to her. Fern, right? She said. From the Slasher Chicks. I've seen you skate. You're really good. Mary's outline wavered. A Slasher Chicks tank top replaced her peasant blouse, black and red and skin tight. I sighed. I hate it when you do that. But you love me, and you've done something horrible to your hands which you're not going to let me tell your parents about, so I think we're even, said Mary. Fern was gripping my left arm hard enough that it hurt. She's a ghost, she exclaimed. And you're adorable, said Mary. Okay, let's not, I said. Fern, this is Mary Dunlavey, my childhood babysitter and adopted aunt. She's been keeping an eye on me so that my family doesn't burn down the world trying to find me and bring me home. Mary, this is Fern Conway, my roommate and teammate and easily startled friend. Please don't torture her for fun. I do everything for fun, said Mary. It's a pleasure to finally meet you, Fern. You've been a good friend to Annie. She doesn't have many of those. How are you a ghost? Asked Fern. I died. I wasn't ready to move on. I decided to haunt the living for a while. I wound up babysitting this one's grandmother. Mary hooked a thumb toward me. And somehow, that turned into haunting their family in specific. As long as there are prices, I'm going to be around to change their diapers, wipe their noses, and try to keep them from getting swallowed by unspeakable creatures that they've brought home and named Fluffy.
But you had to die? Asked Fern anxiously.
Mary gave her a sad, sympathetic look. It's all right, she said. Everything dies. One day, you'll die. And when you do, you'll find someone like me waiting to give you your options and docent you all the way into whatever you decide to do next. Right now, what I'd like to do is know why you're in my kitchen, I said. Because you told me to be, said Mary. I paused. Oh, I said finally. Crap, I totally forgot. Because of your hands? Because of my hands. I held them up. One of the quick service restaurants had an accident. A deep fire blew up, doused this poor woman in hot oil. I tried to help, and I burned my hands. That wasn't the whole story. From the look on her face, Mary knew it. But Fern didn't know about my little problem, and she was freaking out badly enough over Mary that I didn't want to drop any more surprises on her. It can be easy to forget, in a world where humans are the dominant species and human cultures are dominant no matter where you go, that all thinking creatures will have their own cultural ideas, opinions, and hang-ups. I didn't know what sylphs thought of people who could set things on fire with a touch, and I didn't want to find out by making myself homeless. Did you get actual medical assistance, or did you just wrap them in gauze and call it a night? Because I can call your mother- Please don't. I lowered my hands. The Lowryland EMTs patched me up. It's only minor damage. I've got light duty for the next 2 days while I heal, and then I should be all better. Your mother will resurrect me just so she can kill me if I let something happen to you, and she scares me. Mary folded her arms. She married in, remember? She doesn't have that automatic do-what-Mary-says programming that blood family gets. If I let you burn your fingers off or whatever, she'll have me stuffed into a spirit jar before I can say it wasn't my fault. I won't burn my fingers off, I said. The smell of fried chicken was starting to make my mouth water, a as my body remembered that I hadn't eaten anything since a few bites of bad salad.
Can you fix me a plate? I think I can hold a fork if I'm careful about it.
Of course, said Mary. She opened a cupboard and took down two plates.
Fern? Chicken? I'm assuming you're not a vegetarian, unless tofu bacon has gotten much more convincing.
Please, said Fern.
Now, while I'm doing this, Annie, how about you tell me why you ceased to exist this morning and what was so important that I needed to come to your apartment to find out about it?
Mary's tone was pleasant, but it concealed a razor's edge of tension and threat. I swallowed a groan. Between the pain and the chicken, I had forgotten why I'd told Mary to come and see me. And now I had a problem.
It's nothing, really, I said, with a meaningful glance at Fern.
Mary narrowed her eyes. Liar, she said.
Wait,
Fern looked between us.
Do you not want to talk because I'm here? Is that it? Don't you trust me? I thought you trusted me.
I do trust you, I said. I paused and sighed.
I've sort of been keeping something a secret, and I don't want you to stop being my friend when you find out what it is. That's all.
Oh, Fern frowned. Is this about how you set things on fire when you're asleep? Because I know about that. I think it's sort of cute.
Are you sure you're not part djinn? Because that would explain the fire, except I don't think they are cross-fertile with humans, and I know you're mostly human.
Except for the fire thing. I stared at her. Mary stared at her. Fern shrugged, looking sheepish.
You set off the fire alarm a couple of times, she said. Megan thinks it's faulty. I know you like her, but I figured it was sort of your thing to tell her about.
Why didn't you tell me you knew?
I was reeling, more from the idea that I'd been able to sleep through the fire alarm than from the surprise of learning that Fern knew about my little problem.
I was supposed to be able to wake up and move at a moment's notice. Working a real job was taking more out of me than I'd realized. It didn't help that, with the exception of the knives in my room, which I had to keep hidden in case of a surprise inspection, and which I couldn't take to work with me ever, I was living alone and unarmed, without even a colony of Aeslin mice to reassure me that I was going to get through this. On some level, I'd already given up. Sleeping through the fire alarm was one more sign that it was getting bad. Fern shrugged.
I figured once you wanted me to know, you'd tell me yourself. In the meantime, I wanted you to be comfortable here. I know this has been hard on you. I've been helping as best I could.
Okay. Wow. I took a deep breath.
Yes, this is about the fire thing. I'm entirely human, as far as I know, but my grandfather was a magic user, and it seems I am too. My hands get hot sometimes. Hot enough to start fires. What happened today? I didn't do it.
I couldn't even be angry that she had sort of asked. I would have asked too if our positions had been reversed.
I was having lunch when I heard the screams, and I went to see what was going on. The explosion had already happened. I burned my hands when I started pulling the heat out of her to try and reduce her injuries.
My fingers throbbed in sympathy with the memory. I grimaced. I'm hoping I don't need to do that again for a really long time.
This hurts. Doing the right thing often does, said Mary.
She looked at Fern.
Your roommate's a sorceress, and I'm her dead aunt. Is that okay? Have we covered the situation? Because I'd like to move on before the other roommate gets home.
We have about 3 hours, I said.
I'm fine, said Fern. This is sort of a lot, but I've already been through sort of a lot, so I guess it's more for the pile.
Cryptid therapists must make so much money, I said. Fern's expression was grim.
You have no idea.
Here. Mary thrust a plate of chicken and the associated sides at me.
Take, eat, explain, or I swear to God I will haunt you so hard that you will never sleep, shower, or have sex again.
I don't seem to be doing enough of any of those things at the moment, so I'm not feeling the threat, but I'll explain. I took the plate, moving down the counter before putting it down and clumsily picking up my fork. Bending my fingers even that much hurt. I still needed to eat. and I didn't want Mary deciding that it was time to bring the airplane out of retirement. Virtually everyone has to deal with people who knew them when they were babies, and will bring up awkward things like, "Hey, remember when you ran through the dinner party naked?" Or, "Hey, remember when I used to pretend your fork was an airplane when you didn't want to eat your beets?" But most people understand that age is a real thing that happens to everyone. Mary doesn't so much. She knows the kids she cares for eventually turn into adults and have children of their own, and intellectually, she understands that this means we're not her charges anymore. Emotionally, she's been a 16-year-old girl since the day she died, and she'll stay that way until she moves on to whatever comes next for dead babysitters who serve the spirits at the crossroads. For her, we will always be children, and we will always need her to tuck us into bed and turn off our bedroom lights. There's something soothing about that. There's also something really sad. In my family, the two often go hand in hand. Fern got her own plate and came to stand beside me, expression expectant, like she'd been waiting for this particular iteration of story time for years. I put my plate on the counter and took a deep breath. Lowry Land is secretly being controlled by a cabal of witches and magic users, and they want to train me so that I'll be less of a danger to myself and others, I said. Huh? Said Fern. Mary's eyes narrowed. What kind of witches and magic users? There is at least one route witch and one train spotter, and there's a man with a wand who says he can teach me how to control whatever the hell it is I have going on, so I'm assuming he's a sorcerer like Grandpa was. I took a bite of mashed potatoes, since they didn't require chewing, swallowed, and said, I'm going to let him teach me. I don't see where I have much of a choice. Neither do I, said Mary. Fern was looking back and forth between us, seeming increasingly dismayed. What do you mean you don't have a choice? She squeaked. You don't know these people. What if they get too interested in you and find out about Megan and me? They already know, said Mary wearily. Fern and I both turned to stare at her. Mary shook her head. People like that? You called them a cabal. That's not a word I hear you use all that often. Did they use it first? I nodded. There you go. People who call themselves a cabal are usually very interested in keeping an eye on the territory they've decided to stake out as their own. In this case, Lowry Land. There's no way they don't know about any non-humans who live or work here. Probably know about the ones who just come to the park to spend a day with their kids. Fern looked ill. They know. We have to warn people. Why? Fern turned to look at me. I did my best to sound reassuring as I said, If they know, they could have done something about it a long time ago. I know route witches can ward against ghosts, but Mary can visit me here and at work. They probably have at least some influence over hiring decisions, and you still got your job and Megan still got her residency. The Covenant hunts witches too, when they can find them. These people aren't the same as you, but maybe they're not the enemy either. And if they are, learning how not to burn the building down is still a good thing, said Mary. You said they had a train spotter. How strong? He's drawing power from the roller coasters, so probably pretty strong. He couldn't pick up my real name by looking at me. I've spent too many years as Melody for that to be a quick trick. Well, it's best if you try to avoid him and any other train spotters they have, just to be sure. Fern frowned. What's a train spotter? Do you know what a route witch is? Asked Mary. No. Okay. Train spotters are a sort of route witch. Route witches draw power from travel, usually on the highway, but any form of travel will do. They're the most powerful of the journey magicians in general. Train spotters only get power from trains. They need to be surrounded by a shell of man-made machine that someone else controls for them to tap into whatever the universe is trying to tell them. Interestingly, this makes them better at scrying, at picking apart the threads of reality and seeing what's true and underneath them. If the Covenant knew how to work with train spotters without killing them, we'd all be in trouble. Fern looked at me. I shrugged. You can't keep a train spotter captive without breaking their connection to the rails, I said. The Covenant has their magic users, but As far as I know, they've never managed to catch a road witch of any sort, and certainly not a train spotter. They've had a few Umbramancers, and those are technically journey magicians, said Mary. That's neither here nor there. Annie, if you're going to work with these people, you have to avoid the train spotter. That shouldn't be too hard. Privately, I wasn't so sure. I had no idea how their structure worked. But that woman nearly died today, and she was going to need years of surgery and physical therapy before she could recover, assuming she ever truly would. If I'd been better able to control the fire, I might have spared her at least some of that suffering. I definitely wouldn't have burned my hands. Whether it was a good idea or not, I needed the training. And these were the only people who were offering it to me. They must have some powerful wards on their headquarters, said Mary. That would explain why you blinked out like that. As soon as you were on their home ground, you were hidden from everyone who might be looking for you. Even me. And you're a family ghost, I said with a frown. This is good, though. If you can't find me, the Covenant can't find me. You can't hide in their space forever. No, but it's good to know that I have some place to run where the Covenant won't be able to stick a pin in me. I took a bite of chicken, actually chewing this time before I said, I'm going to let him train me. The fire's getting stronger, and I'm having more and more trouble keeping it under control. I'll be a danger to myself and others if I don't figure this out soon. I'm not going to stop you, said Mary. But I have 3 requests, and none of them are negotiable. Okay, I said. Shoot. First, you call for me immediately after every session you have. I may not always be able to come to you. I'll hear you, and I'll know that you're all right. Deal? Second, if you wind up alone with that train spotter, with any train spotter at any point, you run. I don't care if you have to abandon everything you own, you run. There's too much about you that no one needs to know. I looked at her and nodded silently. Mary will protect me to the ends of the earth and beyond. I've always known that about her. But if it's a choice between just me and the rest of the family, she's going to take the option that saves the most of us. She has the luxury of knowing that death is not the end. If she had to leave me in the path of a moving truck to pull both my siblings to safety, she'd just get to spend a few years teaching me how to be a better ghost. Not the worst thing that's ever happened. Third, Mary took a deep, unnecessary breath, held it for a moment, and let it out before saying, You don't have enough backup. You need more. You need to let me tell Sam where to find you. Absolutely not, I said. Out of the question. I ran away from him so he wouldn't be in danger. Oh, and not because you were afraid that Antimony Price, the Ice Queen, might be starting to thaw? Fern put her hand up. Who's Sam? A friend, I said, as Mary said, Annie's boyfriend. We stopped and glared at each other across the counter, which wasn't doing nearly enough to provide either one of us with cover. Fern blinked. Annie has a boyfriend? Yes, said Mary, and no, I said, again at the same time, again followed by glaring. Huh, said Fern. She paused before asking, more delicately, Has he actually met you when you were being you, or did he only ever meet you when you were pretending to be somebody else? Because you can be really sweet when you're pretending to be somebody else. I threw a biscuit at her. Fern laughed as she dodged. You're only angry because it's true. No, it's not. I was myself the whole time I knew Sam. Or at least a version of myself. A version who didn't have anything to worry about beyond the borders of a carnival. And a boy who might have loved her if he'd only been given the time. And we're not calling him here. It's not safe. It isn't safe for anyone, said Mary. Not Fern, not me, and certainly not you. Why should it be any different for Sam? Because, I hesitated. Because he didn't ask for any of this. Mary's smile was small and sad. Oh, Peaches, she said. Do you think any of us did? The phone rang. We all turned to look at it. It was a small idiosyncrasy in the Lowryland housing rules that every household had to include a fixed landline. We could all have cell phones. We were expected to. And those of us who lived on property but had bad or absent credit could finance them through Lowry Inc. But We had to keep a landline in case of emergencies. That way, no matter what happened, the company could say they had, at the very least, made a good-faith effort to contact us.
"Your closest," said Fern meekly.
I was also the one with the wrapped-up hands. I decided not to mention that as I turned and pawed the receiver off the wall, managing finally to get it wedged between my cheek and shoulder.
"Hello?"
I said. "There's a ghost in your apartment," said Emily. I glanced at Mary, who was looking at me with both eyebrows raised.
"Yes," I said.
"Do you want it there?" The question was casual, but the many things it meant were anything but. Emily was a route witch. She could ward my home against Mary in a heartbeat. I didn't know whether she could do it from a distance. I had to assume yes. Route witches are all about distance, and this one was short enough to be effectively null.
"Yes," I said firmly. "It's the relative I told you about."
Mary's eyebrows climbed higher.
"Do you know what kind of ghost it is?"
There was the $5 million question.
If the Lowryland cabal was on my side, my answer wouldn't change anything.
A dead aunt was a dead aunt, even if I was pretending she was a dead grandmother, and all dead relatives were worth preserving. If they were secretly the bad guys, having access to a crossroads ghost would be a temptation too far.
"Road ghost," I said. "That's all she's ever been willing to tell us. She died on the road and now she's a road ghost."
"Ah," said Emily.
"Colin was very displeased to hear that you've been injured. Your shifts for tomorrow have been canceled due to medical reasons. He expects you in his office by 9 a.m.
The line went dead. I hung the phone up gingerly, turning to fully face the others.
"Guess I've got class in the morning," I said. "Guess I'm going to talk to a man about a monkey," said Mary,
and disappeared. My eyes went wide and my fingers went hot.
"Mary," I squawked. "Mary!"
She didn't reappear. I covered my face with my hands. Fern patted me awkwardly on the shoulder.
"Don't worry," she said.
"Maybe he won't come," I groaned.
Chapter 10. "Believe me, I want to be here even less than you do. Now, are we going to fight like civilized people, or am I going to stand here and taunt you?"
Jane Harrington Price. The public relations building of Lowryland, at way too goddamn early in the morning. Either Colin didn't trust me, or he didn't trust the Lowryland train system, because when I opened my apartment door at 8:30, there was a sleek black car idling at the curb. Fern and Megan clustered in the doorway behind me, staring. Megan made a clucking noise with her tongue.
"Whoever he is, marry him and keep us in the style to which we'd like to become accustomed."
"He works in public relations."
"Whoever he is, murder him and make it look like an accident, but make sure you get away with his wallet,"
Megan amended. "Thanks for the vote of murder confidence," I said. She flashed me a bright, toothy smile.
"I always have faith in you when it comes to murder."
Fern tugged on my arm. When I turned to face her, she reached up and pulled me into a hug with suddenly heavy arms, effectively trapping me long enough for her to whisper,
"Be careful,"
in my ear. She let me go. I nodded, trying to show that I understood before I stepped into the humid morning air and walked down the path toward the waiting car. The sky was bruised black along the horizon, speaking of a storm to come. When I opened the car's rear door, a blast of air conditioning nearly rocked me back on my heels.
"Hello," I said. "I'm Melody West. Are you here for me?"
"Get in," said the driver gruffly.
I got in. The car's interior was real leather and smelled buttery and rich, like I was wrapped in a cocoon made of nothing but the idea of money. I sank into it, trying not to do the math on how long this car could have paid for my groceries, and failing. My family isn't poor. We do a lot of work for the cryptid community, and while they may not all pay in money as humans understand it, the barter system can turn into money easily enough, and we have really good accountants who truly understand the process of making our income look believable. But my parents believe we should know how to be hungry,
because things like that can be a disorienting shock to the system otherwise. I could balance a budget by the time I was 16, and I'd spent enough summers eating elbow macaroni and stewed tomatoes with the Campbell family carnival to genuinely respect how much easier money made things. This car wasn't just about being expensive or being easier than the cheaper alternatives. It was about making sure people knew the owner had money, enough to burn it on all leather interiors and the latest bells and whistles. There was even a bottle of water in the holder between the seats, cold enough for beads of moisture to be forming on the outside.
"You're late," said the driver gruffly.
"It's 8:30, I said. "My lessons don't begin until 9.
"Which means being there at 9, he said. "You should have come out 3 minutes ago. Buckle your seatbelt."
I fastened my seatbelt. That's never been the kind of instruction I needed to receive twice. But I was still surprised when he rammed his foot down on the gas and sent us racing out of the apartment complex, heading for the nearest highway at a speed that seemed designed to attract the attention of the local police and make us even later. That was, until he reached under the dashboard and produced a blue bubble light, which he set in front of the steering wheel. It flashed rhythmically, and the traffic melted away in front of us.
"You're a cop?" I asked warily. "Lowryland Security," he replied.
"Huh," I said. We weren't on park property. It was questionable whether we were even on Lowry property. They owned a disturbing amount of the land around here, including pieces that no one would expect. Neighborhoods filled with single-family homes, strip malls, even supposedly public parks. No one associated those places with Lowry, but look deep enough and the trails of ownership were clear. That didn't give park security any authority there. The flashing blue light was setting my teeth on edge. I tried to focus on it, and found that I couldn't. My eyes skittered away from the moment of the flash. Something about it wasn't right, but it sure did make the drive easier. We pulled up to the backlot gates with 8 minutes to spare, and my driver even stopped the car when we reached the PR building. I reached for the handle. The door was locked. I was considering whether or not to get worried when the door opened from the outside, revealing my driver.
"We're here," he said.
"Great." I unfastened my belt and slid out. The man was close to 7 feet tall and built like a wide receiver from the NFL. "Anybody ever tell you that you're incredibly tall?" He didn't even crack a smile.
"Get inside," he said.
"Yes, sir," I said, and turned, walking away as quickly as my little feet would carry me. The man wasn't as unsettling as his little blue light, but something about him made me think that lingering in his presence wouldn't be a good idea. The air conditioning inside the PR building was turned up even higher than it had been in the car. Emily was waiting for me in the lobby. She wrinkled her nose at the sight of my yoga pants and tank top and asked, "Don't you own any real clothing?" "I'm a minimum wage park employee," I said. "If I can't get it for a discount at the company store, I don't own it." "We're going to have to fix that," she said, and sniffed, like the mere sight of synthetic fibers offended her. "Come on, you don't want to be late." She spun on one perfectly shaped heel and stalked down the hall toward the elevator, leaving me to hurry after her. At least it didn't look like we were taking the magical stairway to absolutely nowhere this morning. "I'm getting that idea," I said, once I had managed to catch up. "Do you have any idea what's going to happen today?" "You're going to earn our faith in you." Emily stopped in front of the elevator and pressed the button. It lit up. She pressed it 3 more times anyway, doing an impatient little jig with her knees. "We don't get much new blood around here." "Bad reputation?" She rolled her eyes. "Please, we offer a health plan. We have the best reputation of any cabal this side of the Mississippi River. And did you see that bullshit the LA folks pulled on live television last year? Right now, I think we're the best-regarded cabal in the country." "And why?" "Because there isn't much new blood to get." For the first time, the muscles around Emily's eyes relaxed, her gaze softening, becoming less predatory and more wistful. "You don't know how much you've missed." The elevator doors opened with a ding before I could say anything, and the moment passed. Emily's mask of cool disdain snapped right back into place as she waved imperiously for me to get into the tiny,
featureless box. The urge to balk was high. There's a word for people who follow strangers into places with no clear escape route, and it's not survivor. But there was fire in my fingers, and inertia at my heels. I didn't want to run again. Try starting over in a place where luck might not be on my side. And luck had been on my side since choosing to come to Lowryland. How else could I explain just happening to stumble across my old high school cheer captain? Or even having the Melody West ID in my go bag when I was supposed to have buried her years ago? The Cabal was big and scary and unknown. They were also offering to help me get myself under control before someone got seriously hurt. My lucky streak hadn't failed me yet. It was going to. Lucky streaks always do. For the moment, I needed to let my bets ride and roll the dice again. Emily smirked as I joined her in the elevator. That seemed to be her default expression. Timid, new girl. You know, you should have been played by Natalie Dormer in the movie, I replied flatly. You have the right mix of mean and murderous. I'll take that as a compliment, she said. She pressed a button. The door slid shut. Let's go over the rules for today. Since you haven't told me what they are, can you really expect me to go over them? Emily rolled her eyes. I hate new girls, she said. You always think you're so clever, and you're so very wrong. Rule one, do as you're told. Colin knows what he's doing, and you don't, so if he's giving you an instruction, he has a good reason. You can ask questions. In fact, asking questions is rule two. But you need to listen. Got it, I said. No, you don't, but I believe you'll try, and that's honestly more than some of us are expecting from you. Rule three is going to be harder. You need to remember that you are a guest here, in our space and in Lowryland, and comport yourself accordingly. Got it. Use my manners. Lady of the Underpass, preserve me, muttered Emily. The elevator doors opened, revealing a large, empty room that wouldn't have looked out of place in a suburban dojo or dance studio. One wall was mirrored. Another was clear glass, showing what felt like all of Florida from a seemingly impossible height. I was suddenly very glad never to have suffered from vertigo. Once again, Emily placed her hand between my shoulders and shoved, pushing me out of the elevator and into the wide, empty room. Have fun, she said. The elevator doors closed on her smirking face, and she was gone. The room seemed even larger without the safety of the elevator behind me. I took a few hesitant steps forward, wishing I had a knife, or better yet, 20 knives, or better yet, 20 knives and a brick of C4. Plastic explosives are a strange and dangerous security blanket, but they tend to make whatever's scaring me go away quickly, so I'm in favor. My reflection looked small and scared and frazzled, nothing like the image of myself that I've always tried to project. I stopped, looking critically at myself. My hair was good. Megan didn't have hair of her own. Again, snakes. And consequentially viewed me and Fern as life-sized versions of her childhood Barbie dolls. When she'd learned I used henna to keep my hair closer to red than brown, she'd actually squealed and demanded I let her take over the process. Since I hadn't been doing my own henna since high school, I'd gladly handed her the reins. I needed to eat more. My collarbones were showing too clearly through my skin, and that has never been a good look for me, or a goal of mine. My sister is a dancer and always will be, whether she's doing it professionally or not. For her, weight management is a part of her career. I, on the other hand, skate to kill and set things on fire with the power of my mind. The trapeze requires a certain awareness of size, but that's as much about knowing the strength of your partner as it is the size of your pants. Sam had been perfectly happy to sling me around the big tent, boobs, hips, and all, and he had never once suggested I needed to cut back on the sandwiches and anything other than jest. Lowryland hadn't been as kind. I was still eating, but my meals were more like the one I'd failed to consume yesterday for the most part. Park food, scarfed down fast, assuming it made it past my lips at all. Nutrition and the food pyramid were no longer my friends. Hello? No response. I am assuming you're watching me right now, since it wouldn't make sense for you not to be.
Not when I'm in your nice training room and all. So, if you're watching me, you must be testing me in some way.
I was talking, partially to hear myself talk, and partially to see whether anything in the room reacted. Nothing did.
I do better on tests when I know what I'm supposed to be accomplishing. Just an FYI.
Still no response. This would get irritating fast if I allowed it to do so, which was probably what my new teacher was counting on. The more annoyed I was, the more likely I was to set something on fire without meaning to. I didn't know whether this was intended to gauge how much power I could generate or give them a baseline of how easy I was to annoy, and honestly, I didn't care. They were playing games. I could play games too. I wish I had my skates. This is a nice, smooth floor like the ones I used to train on, not like the bumpy paths in Lowryland. I could build up a real head of steam here. I walked to the middle of the room, dropped my bag, and kept walking until I came to the bar in front of the mirror, where I kicked off my shoes. Verity would already have been practicing her ballet form. I had something similar in mind. My hands hurt less than they had immediately after being burned. My fingers still felt thick and clumsy, slow to obey my commands and slower still to clamp down, but that was okay. What I had in mind didn't require fine motor manipulation. Bending forward, I rested my forearms against the floor, putting the bulk of my weight on my elbows. I held that position for a moment, letting my spine lengthen into the pose, before lifting up onto my toes, clenching the muscle at my core, and slowly, carefully, lifting my legs into the air. As always, there was a moment where it felt like I was going to overbalance, sending myself crashing to the floor. The moment passed, and then my toes were lightly tapping the surface of the mirror, reassuring me that gravity was working the way it was supposed to. Trampoline and the trapeze are all about core strength. Without it, you'll never get off the floor. Funny thing, cheerleading and being a roller derby jammer work the same muscle groups. I may not be the fastest thing on 2 feet, although give me a pair of skates and I'll give damn near anyone a run for their money. And I may not have the best aim in my family, but I can hang upside down like a bat for hours. It's actually pretty soothing. Even blood needs a vacation every now and then, and I enjoy sending mine to visit my brain. Closing my eyes, I focused on my breathing, letting every inhale fill my entire body, letting every exhale root me deeper in my pose. The pain in my hands receded, driven away by the meditative focus on being exactly who and what and where I was. A door clicked shut somewhere behind me. I didn't open my eyes.
Miss West, may I ask what in the world you're doing?
The voice belonged to Wand Guy. Nice to know I'd been right about who was keeping an eye on me. Still not opening my eyes, I said, I figured you'd gotten stuck in a meeting or something and wanted me to entertain myself. I'm meditating.
You're inverted.
Not quite. I can't trust my hands and there's no hang bar on the ceiling anyway.
Please remember what it means to be right side up. And turn to look at me while I'm talking to you.
He didn't sound angry. More confused with a healthy side order of amusement. That was something I could work with. I tapped my toes against the mirror one last time before lowering my legs toward the ground, pushing myself farther up onto my elbows at the same time until I was drawing a horizontal line with my body. This accomplished, I lowered my legs the rest of the way down and opened my eyes, meeting my own gaze in the mirror. There was Wand Guy, standing behind me and about 8 feet back, his wand in his hand. He was wearing a suit, big surprise there, and a quizzical expression.
Yoga? He inquired.
Among other things. I pushed myself to my feet, dusting off my knees before I turned to face him. It helps to keep me calm. The corner of his mouth quirked upward. I'd guessed correctly about the idea behind putting me in this room by myself then.
I see, he said.
I offered him my biggest, brightest smile.
So, what's the plan? How are you going to teach me to avoid going full carry?
How much do you know about other sorcerers in your family line?
The question was mild, but that didn't mean it wouldn't have teeth. A It's always hard to know how people will react to the name Price. Some of them think we're still with the Covenant, which makes us monsters. Others think we've long since sold the human race out in favor of the cryptid communities of the world, which also makes us monsters. And regardless of how he responded, telling him who I really was would compromise the whole hiding thing I had going on. So I kept smiling, and I lied. Not much. So far, so good. It was my grandfather, according to our family ghost, and she didn't see too much of what he could do. Just knew he could do it. He didn't leave behind any instruction manuals. Unfortunately, he didn't have any other family, so it wasn't like we could go talk to them when I started smoking.
How much does your grandmother know? Having a family ghost is unusual enough that she must be aware of something.
This was where I'd need to start treading carefully. So far as I knew, magic users can't detect falsehood any more than, say, route witches or babysitters. They can learn to read people, but they can't hear a lie the way a train spotter would. So I could tell Colin lies and be okay, as long as I constructed a chain that made logical sense and wasn't likely to trip me up later. It was just that if he asked me to repeat any of this in front of the train spotter, I was going to go down in flames. Oh well, I'd come too far to let one more possible disaster keep me from learning what I needed to know. I didn't know she was my grandmother when I was little. I thought she was my imaginary friend, I said glibly. She would appear after my parents turned the lights out. She told me bedtime stories and chased the monsters out of my closet before she went away. When I asked my mom about her, she always said there was no girl in my room after bedtime. Every kid has their own version of normal, you know? When other kids talked about their imaginary friends, I thought they could see them the way I could see mine.
I see, said Colin. In for a penny, in for a pound.
She went away when I was 9. That was the year I found out Santa Claus wasn't real, and neither were imaginary friends. She came back 5 years later, when I had a bad dream and set my pillow on fire. She's been with me ever since.
And she couldn't tell you anything else about your grandfather?
Just that he'd been an immigrant, so if he had any relatives, they were very far away, and he never liked to talk about them. I looked at Colin, all wide eyes and innocence. If I'd had a bow to clip in my hair, I would have. Anything to make me look less like a potential threat. I really hope you can help me. I'm so tired of being afraid everything is going to burn.
That isn't a fear you'll need to harbor for much longer, said Colin. Have you ever listened to a baby's cry?
I blinked. Yeah, I'm a human being who works at Lowryland. My days are filled with crying babies.
Infants scream without concern for the damage they may do to themselves in the process. Their little throats are forever raw from the strain of howling their indignation to an uncaring world. As they grow older, they learn to use their voices for other things. They learn to speak, in some cases to sing, to modulate themselves. Would you say that speech is a better use for the voice than primal howls?
I guess.
That's what I'm here to do for you, said Colin, with more than a trace of smugness. Right now, you are an infant. A powerful one, yes, but capable of nothing more complex than the magical equivalent of screaming because you want your diaper changed. You are a danger to yourself and others. As you learn to control what you can do, to speak in a magical sense, you won't be able to scream as loudly. Your body will learn its limits and refuse to allow you to endanger yourself unless your life is on the line.
I brightened. No more fires?
Not unless you intend to cast them. And even then, they'll require substantially more work than they do now.
He shook his head.
Covenant of St. George has much to answer for. They've been the end of so many magical bloodlines. Very nearly including yours, I'd wager. There's no other reason for an adult sorcerer to leave his territory and move someplace where he'd have neither family nor familiarity to protect him.
In a way, the Covenant had been responsible for the death of all my grandfather's blood relatives. They had sent them, one after the other, into the face of danger. And when danger swallowed them whole, the Covenant had turned its eyes to other families and other opportunities. The Price family was small now, But we were doing worlds better than Grandpa Thomas had been, back when he'd been the last branch of a dying family tree.
All right, I said. Where do we begin?
We began with concentration exercises. Colin would show me flashcards, asking me to memorize their contents in a matter of seconds, and hold them at the forefront of my mind as he asked me dozens of unrelated questions. He would recite poetry, only to stop and demand that I echo it back to him. He wouldn't repeat a single word. I drew circles and chanted riddles and focused and concentrated. And at the end of our three-hour session, I felt like I'd been running laps for the entire time. My head ached, my skin was too tight, and I was deeply aware of every ache in my ass from spending most of the lesson sitting on the hardwood floor. Colin smiled at me.
How are your hands?
He asked. I paused. Cool, I said finally.
Good, he said. Your lessons start in earnest tomorrow.
Then he stood and walked away, into the window, into nothingness, and was gone, leaving me to stare after him.
Okay,
this was going to be interesting. Chapter 11.
You can't do this alone. Nobody can. Nobody should have to.
Alice Healy. Lowryland. 3 weeks and 18 lessons later. Trying to stay awake. My break from work only lasted for 3 days, paid, of course, since I'd been wounded in the course of trying to show the true Lowry spirit, and since my new mentor held some undisclosed but apparently terrifying position in the corporate hierarchy, before I was shoved back into the workforce, and still bandaged to keep the healing damage from freaking out the paying guests. I was doing better than poor Kathy. Lowry Inc. was covering her medical bills since it was their deep fryer that had experienced a mechanical fault at the exact wrong time. That was the least of her problems. She was going to have a long road to recovery, one that would involve multiple skin grafts to rebuild her face. Every time someone mentioned her in my presence, it was all I could do not to blurt out the location of the last Caladrius-run hospital I knew of in North America. The avian cryptids can heal almost anything given sufficient time and resources. They could put Kathy's face back together, or at least back into a shape that wouldn't hurt every time she tried to open her eyes. Some secrets must be kept. That doesn't make keeping them any less painful. Every morning I got up and went to the PR building, where I spent hours with Colin studying, reciting, and working my way through the long, slow process of learning to control the gifts I'd never asked my genes to give me. When I was done with that, I would shower, change, and get a ride to the employee gate, usually arriving just in time for my shift to start. Not exactly the sort of schedule that leaves a lot of time for a social life. Not that my time mattered. I'd been assigned to Fairyland on a permanent basis after telling Emily it was my preference within the park. Having friends in high places paid some useful dividends, even if half the people I worked with now looked at me like I was a corporate spy, while the other half scurried around in silent terror, having somehow convinced themselves that I'd shoved the unfortunate Kathy into the fryer under the mistaken assumption that she was Robin. I had never been popular at work, but this was rapidly approaching ridiculous. And yet, I hadn't started a single fire. Intentionally or otherwise, since I'd started working with Colin. He'd asked me to pull the heat out of several candles and a handful of bright, spitting sparklers, turning fire into smoke, into nothing at all. He'd asked me to pull the heat out of several candles and a handful of bright, spitting sparklers, turning smoke into fire into nothing at all. And I was starting to feel like that was the sort of thing I could learn to enjoy, the point where my body somehow converted the kinetic potential of the world into a beautiful sort of stillness. If I really tried, I could hold that same stillness under my breastbone, comforting and soothing me when my coworkers left me standing by myself in the middle of a guest-clogged store. I was clinging to that stillness now, as the afternoon parade floated majestically by outside the gift shop. The Goblin Market float was parallel to our window, and Princesses Laura and Lizzie ran wildly from one side to the other, dodging marauding goblins. Every time the music hit a crescendo,
They would grab one of the large plastic vines that had been provided for their use and swing themselves out over the adoring crowd, waving and blowing kisses before they turned around and did it all again. Other floats had other princesses and other routines, which meant that Fern was probably enjoying her lunch right about now. The princesses in the parade weren't the ones who did the meet and greets with the guests. Their costumes were usually sparklier, less screen accurate, and designed for a different range of motion. Since only one iteration of each character could be loose in the park at any given time, the photo princesses were getting a well-deserved break. The same could be said for those of us working alongside the parade route. The sidewalks and walkways were clogged with gaping guests, making it virtually impossible for anyone to get into or out of the store. It was probably a safety hazard. As long as it gave us time to fold all these damn shirts, I didn't care. That's what I was doing when the engine blew. I was folding shirts, hands working on autopilot while my mind reviewed Colin's most recent set of training exercises. My back to the street. There was a loud banging noise, like a nail gun going off. And someone screamed. That first scream was the bellwether for quite a few more. In a matter of seconds, the world was made entirely of screaming. I dropped the shirt, fingers suddenly nerveless, hands refusing to close. There was no heat, but I whipped around all the same, running toward the window. Half my coworkers were already there. No one shoved or jockeyed for position. We just stood, frozen, terrified, as the Goblin Market float toppled sideways, falling onto the crowded sidewalk. Several screams cut off abruptly, like the screamers were no longer available for comment. That was enough to break the spell my shock had cast. I ran for the door, pausing only long enough to lean over the counter and grab the first aid kit we kept there for the inevitable staff accidents. I didn't think individually packaged aspirin and mini bandages were going to help much, but I had to do something. The street outside had devolved into pure chaos. People were still screaming, scattering away from the fallen float like it was a giant grenade chucked into their midst. The sound was somehow muted, unable to live up to the impact of that first ear-splitting cacophony. Babies and young children wailed, clinging to their parents or, more chillingly, sitting abandoned on the curb, with no caretakers in sight. The float itself was on its side, completely obscuring a long stretch of sidewalk, burying whatever had been there under more than a ton of plastic, papier-mâché, and metal rebar. A red pool was forming along the float's edge, and despite the theme of the area, I knew it hadn't come from a pomegranate full and fine. One of the curling blackberry vines the actresses playing Laura and Lizzie usually used as handholds while they raced around their float was on fire. I ran toward it, trying to feel the heat, to focus my training on pulling it out of the world. A burning float was one of the only things I could think of that would make this already bad situation genuinely worse. My hands stayed cold and calm. They were just hands. I stopped in the middle of the street, buffeted on all sides by guests fleeing from the accident, and stared at them. There was no heat. I could feel what was coming off the float, feel it getting stronger as the fire began to spread, but it was all external fire. There was nothing inside me. Colin's words about babies and the way they screamed, hurting themselves because they didn't know any better, flashed through my mind. I knew better now. I knew hurting myself didn't do me any long-term good, but damn it, I could have done with that lesson kicking in a little later. Fuck, I muttered. A firing offense if any of the fleeing guests felt like reporting me for swearing while wearing an official Lowryland uniform, and started running again, heading for the center of the chaos. The actress playing Lizzie had been flung free when the float went down. She was sprawled on the concrete about 10 feet away from the wheels, one arm bent at an angle that spoke clearly of a bad break, the sort of thing that would require more than just a cast to repair. I stopped next to her, crouching down and feeling for a pulse. She moaned when my fingers pressed against her throat. That was a good sign. Dead people don't usually make a lot of noise. You need to be as still as possible, I said. Most of the crowd was already past this point, fleeing for places that weren't at risk of being on fire. The injured actress's chances of being trampled were low. You fell hard, and you could have a spinal injury. She moaned again. It was difficult to tell for sure whether she could hear me. If she couldn't, she was unlikely to move, and if she could, she would hopefully listen. I shoved myself back to my feet and ran on toward the float, hissing, Mary,
under my breath. Mary is a pretty common name. My dead aunt doesn't appear every time I say it, which is a good thing given how many Marys I've met through cheerleading, roller derby, and being a physical meat creature who walks in the world and has to deal with the consequences of uninspired parents. But she hears it every time a member of the family says her name, and she can choose to come and see what we're going on about. I ran, and suddenly a white-haired woman was running next to me, her steps making no sound. "What the hell?" she demanded. "Float fell," I replied. There were sirens in the distance, the sound of Lowry Land's emergency teams racing toward us. There'd be no effort to cover this one up. This wasn't some behind-the-scenes accident where no guests had been injured. This was a full-on disaster, and everyone was going to get involved. The trouble with something like this, apart from the loss of life and the therapy that all these children were going to need, came from Lowry Land's design. Like most Florida theme parks, real estate was at a premium, and a space that wasn't somehow interactive or eye-catching or otherwise keeping our guests engaged was a waste of money. That meant there were very few straight roads within the park itself. Security staff could come through the back lots and the tunnels, but the emergency vehicles? They had to travel along one of a limited number of routes. And at this time of day, with the rest of the parade still clogging the street and screaming guests fleeing everywhere, getting through to us was going to be just the side of impossible. "What do you want me to do?" demanded Mary. I quickly looked around. No one was looking at us. Anything that happened now was likely to be written off as shock, a hallucinatory aftereffect of seeing something this horrible happen in a place that was supposed to be all about happiness and joy. "Go under the float," I said. "See how many dead we're dealing with. If there are any ghosts, see if you can convince them to go away. I'm going to take care of the kids." Mary nodded and was gone. I kept running until I reached the sidewalk and the first of the sobbing, somehow left behind children. "Please. You were with an older sibling who forgot about you," I thought desperately, picking up a weeping little girl with one arm and grabbing a baby carrier with the other. The girl wailed and buried her face against my shoulder. I was a stranger, sure, but I was a stranger in a goblin market costume. She was wearing a sparkly Princess Laura dress. Having someone from what was probably her favorite movie come to rescue her must have been the only thing that made sense right now. There was blood on the lacy edge of her dress. "Please, think it's jam," I thought, and ran until I reached a bench, where I plopped both child and carrier down. The little girl didn't go easily. She grabbed for me as soon as it became apparent what I was trying to do, making a keening noise in the back of her throat, like a distressed puppy. I offered her my brightest Lowry Land smile. "Hi," I said. "I'm Melody. What's your name?"
"Ginger,"
she sniffled. "Is this baby with you, Ginger?" She shook her head. "Okay, I have a big job for you, Princess. Do you think you can do a big job for me?"
"I want my mommy,"
she whispered. I understood the sentiment better than I'd ever thought I would as an adult. I wanted my own mommy so badly that it hurt.
"I know, Princess," I said, smoothing Ginger's hair back from her face.
"But I need to help some more people before we can go find your mom. And I need you to be brave and strong like Laura, and watch this baby for me, okay? I can't take a carrier with me while I make sure everyone else is okay." Everyone else was not okay. There was too much blood for that, and too much screaming, even now that most of the guests had fled. A lot of people were never going to be okay again. I kept looking at Ginger and kept smiling, listening to the sirens getting closer and the wailing of the wounded. Finally, sniffling, she said, "Okay," and leaned against the baby carrier. The pressure of her body caused it to rock, and the wailing infant stopped, apparently startled into silence. "I'll be right back," I said solemnly, before turning on my heel and sprinting back into the chaos. Mary was there, her hair standing out like a banner against the blood and smoke. Sometimes I thought she had someone with her, but whenever I tried to look closer, they were gone, fading back into the landscape. She was gathering ghosts, the newly dead who were still too close to the twilight to be visible to the living. That was not great. I mean, it was great in the sense that Lowry Land might not wind up more haunted than it already was. And yet, it would have been nice if no one had died. It would have been wonderful. I plucked four more children off the sidewalks and ran them back to Ginger, who was taking enthusiastically to her new role as
person who was keeping an eye on everyone else. I would drop them off and run again as she started to explain the situation, that I was one of Princess Laura's helpers, and I was going to find all their mommies and daddies just as soon as I was finished finding everyone. She made it sound like a game. That was probably at least half shock speaking, keeping her from fully understanding what was going on. A little shock would have been nice. A little shock would have been great.